Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Robert Jones Jr., whose debut novel, The Prophets, is now available, and it is just an absolutely fantastic novel. It's a great new American novel. And Robert, I must tell you, before we get into the book itself, as I read your book, I kept thinking about E.L. Doctorow and his famous quote that something about the historian will tell you what happened, the novelist will tell you what it felt like. So for this novel, as it's really centered around Isaiah and Samuel living in a plantation as slaves in the antebellum period, what did it feel like for them with all the added parts of their humanity that made it so special and ripe for a novel?
It was obviously a twofold oppression. I could imagine what it was like based on my own family upbringing. I am the descendant of slaves. I knew what it felt like to be black in that time period, but I wanted to know really what it would feel like to be both black and what we now call queer in that time period, and what direction those oppressions would come from. So for Samuel and Isaiah, it is heavy. However, I also wanted to invest in them an interior life that gave them a reprieve from that heaviness. And so that is why their love is so central to the push and the moral of this novel.
Well, there's a lot of novels written about slavery, but there's no template for a novel that incorporates all these themes. So how did you go about putting this together in your mind in a story that would not only touch the reader, but make sense as far as a story goes?
Have mercy. It was the most difficult thing I think I have ever done, because as you said, there was no template. I read as many slave narratives, as many books on race theory and sexuality and gender theory as I possibly could, to try to discover some evidence of something like this being possible. What I found mostly was in a slave narrative called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. Harriet Jacobs describes a slave master raping a male slave. And then in Toni Morrison's Beloved, there's a scene where the character Paul D is sexually assaulted by an overseer. And I thought, okay, but what about love? And so I went to some sociological and anthropological works by scholars to talk about maybe what was sexuality and identity and gender like in Africa pre-colonial. And what I discovered was it was unlike anything the Western mind could conceive of. Esther Arma, who is an artist and activist of Ghanaian descent, puts it this way. She says of her own ancestors, her grandparents and such, sexuality was like the land. There were no boundaries. And so that helped me and gave me the confidence to say, okay, I'm not pulling this out of nowhere. This is really out there. It's just been erased, and I could help reinscribe it into the cultural narrative by writing this book. And as Toni Morrison once said, if you cannot find the book you wish to read, you must write it. I decided that I would.
And you worked on this thing for a better part of a decade, I believe. And as you're pecking away at this and you're thinking about the narrative and the dialogue in here, especially with Isaiah and Samuel, how did you capture the dialogue of a slave? Because there were a few things that came up. First of all, they refer to themselves as slaves, and I always wondered that, if that was the word that was the word of the day, was that the only thing that they were known as? And so how did you capture their dialogue as to how a slave would actually talk, not just recounting the experience, but to another slave?
What's interesting is that I'm a child of Southern descent. I was born in the North, but all of my family is from the South, by way of Dillon, South Carolina, and Savannah, Georgia. So this milieu of Southern culture, of Black Southern culture in particular, is not foreign to me. The way that enslaved people spoke to each other in our own dialect and language, all of these things are imbued in my experience of as being a child of the South. So it wasn't exactly hard for me to imagine how they would speak to each other. And the only time they would refer to each other as slaves in the novel is when they were trying to make a point about their condition. But they actually saw each other as people. You'll notice that they only referred to each other as people when they're amongst each other, and only as slaves if they were trying to prove a point or insult. And that is one of the things I wanted to make sure was true about the novel, is that an enslaved person doesn't really think of themselves as a slave. They think of themselves as a person. It's the enslaver that thinks of them as enslaved.
The whole idea of the prophets for the hook here. This is, I love a novel where you have no idea what it's about just by looking at the title. And then through the different chapters, you have a lot of the biblical prophets listed. Where did that idea to come from to incorporate that particular hook to this novel with this story?
Well, when I was developing the characters, I started to realize in having them interact that what would be the force that would push other people to regard their love with disdain. And what came to me was very clear that it was Christian indoctrination. So what I wanted to do with the novel was examine how our subscribing to Christianity was part of what got us into this idea that there was something inherently sinful or disgusting about queerness. And it's part of the reason why the book goes back into time to pre-colonial Africa to sort of celebrate what sexuality was prior to Christian indoctrination. So once I started writing these characters to sort of confront Samuel and Isaiah, or even be inspired by Samuel and Isaiah, what I realized is that they were all witnesses in some way, whether positive or negative. And for me, understanding Christianity, witnessing is a very big part of it. And I thought, well, that's what prophets do. Prophets are witnesses. They give testimony. And that was when the idea of tying it closer into biblical scripture and naming the book The Prophets came to be.
I'm chatting with Robert Jones Jr. about his brand new novel, The Prophets. It's available now, and it's going to be one of these books that they're talking about at the end of the year, too, as one of the greatest books of the year. Robert, something I found interesting is that Kylie Reed, who I had on this program when her book Such a Fun Age came out, I know she's doing book touring events, virtual events with you, but what influence did Kylie Reed have as far as getting your book published?
Kylie Reed and I share an editor. Sally Kim. And Kylie has been, we call each other Sally siblings. She and Chloe Benjamin, who wrote The Immortalist, have been such wonderful mentors to me. They're like big sisters. They have prepared me for what I'm about to face on this touring journey, what I'm going to face in the publishing journey, what I might face in terms of pushback for the subject matter that I'm talking about in The Prophets. They have been invaluable in helping me to navigate this entire process, and I adore them both.
When you put pen to paper on this, I know that you were working other jobs. I mean, you weren't a writer by trade. You were working other jobs, but you always had that idea of being a writer in mind. And so as you wrote over the years, from the time you were a child on, writing poetry, writing stories, what kept you going back to it, that as opposed to just saying, you know what, that part of my life's over and I'm just going to be a 9-to-5 guy and not ever pursue this dream?
There was something in me that felt like I was not fulfilling my purpose. So I'm sitting at this 9-to-5 job, and I don't feel fulfilled. And I was actually watching an episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show one day, and she had a guest on who was talking about fulfilling your dreams, and he said something to the effect of, don't think about the last step because that will be overwhelming. Think about the next step you have to take to fulfill the thing that you know is your dream in your gut, but you're denying. And that was the catalyst for me to say, okay, I'm going to move back home with my mom, go back to school and study writing, and really put my all into becoming a writer, no matter how scary this feels, because this is all new to me. And for this whole time, I was thinking of writing as a hobby and not as a profession or a purpose. And I took a chance on myself. And I was terrified the entire time. But it seems to have paid off.
Well, talking about moving, living with your mom, you come from and you live in the Bed-Stuy area of Brooklyn, and that is such a historic area. There's murals all over. I've been there. It's a beautiful area. But can you kind of address the whole idea of not only being a writer, but being a writer in that particular area that's so famous for the different athletes, writers, actors that it's produced? A lot of big names. I mean, Jay-Z, Biggie Smalls, Chris Rock, and even Frank McCourt was living there when Angela's Ashes was set.
Yes, and Shirley Chisholm.
Yes.
This neighborhood energizes me and loves me. It is so full and rich with black culture, not just African-American, but Caribbean-American, continental African-American. It is just such a rich place that has gone through so many changes. We're right now experiencing gentrification. But still, even with that happening, there's still such a rich black culture to be inspired by. And I don't know if I could have written this novel anyplace else. Part of my writing process was going outside and sitting on my stoop and watching the people go by, listening to cars drive by, blasting their music, seeing the kids roller skating and playing basketball and handball and things like that. So all of that energy that they gave to me was crucial in helping me to find the right rhythm and the right tone for this book.
Is it difficult for you as a black writer to write a book and write a character like Paul Halifax, a plantation owner? Do you hate him the whole time?
It was extremely difficult. What I had to do was two things that I did not want to do. The first was realize that no matter how despicable Paul Halifax was, he was also a human being. That was difficult work, and I had to do a lot of meditation to get myself to that place. The second was trying to find the reason why Paul Halifax became the person that he became. And that required the first part, finding the humanity in him. And because I was able to do the first, I was able to find the second. So I don't think I hate any of the characters, not even Paul Halifax. I am sad for Paul Halifax because I realize that the situation that he's in, he's dehumanizing himself. He thinks he's actually dehumanizing the enslaved individuals. But what racism does to the person who practices racism, as Toni Morrison puts it, is it dehumanizes them. They're the ones that are becoming monstrous. And so being able to see it from that point of view made it possible for me to confront Paul Halifax and not despise him as I was writing him.
Something else that kind of interests me about the queer community and within the African-American community, there are still some powerful leaders in the black community that are not accepting of homosexuality. And it befuddles me, but why do you think that is after all of the black history of this country that there still seems to be this unacceptance of homosexuality within the black community?
I think that oppression teaches people how to oppress. It doesn't give them better empathy. I think that the individuals in black communities who practice anti-queerness are astute students of white supremacy. They have taken what white people have done to them and decided, maybe subconsciously, maybe unconsciously, that I am going to do this to another person because this is where I get value. As Toni Morrison puts it, I can only be tall if someone else is on their knees. And so that is the lesson they learned, and they now apply it to another oppressed, marginalized community. I think it's terribly sad, and I think most of it comes from the fact that black people are, for the most part, staunchly Christian. And a part of the Christian indoctrination, a part of it, how at least how it's practiced in the West, is that there is a core idea that queerness is against God. And so many people take that particular quote-unquote sin to heart. They'll ignore a lot of the others, the ones that they themselves commit, and sort of blow this one out of proportion in order to feel superior to queer people. And I think queer and trans people are just easy targets. We're the new people to oppress, because it's still somewhat acceptable to do so. And I hope that because there's some hope in some Black Christian communities that practice what they call liberation theology, where they are moving out of this idea that queerness is a sinful construct when it absolutely is not. They are beginning to understand that this is a natural part of human nature.
For all the thousands of people, probably more, that are going to read this book, I bet there's one person that you would love to have been able to have a chance to read it, and that's James Baldwin. Do you think about that?
Oh, have mercy. Yes. If you read the acknowledgement section of the novel, you'll see that it's almost the size of a chapter. I thank directly James Baldwin and also Toni Morrison. Those are the two people, more than anyone else, that I wish could have read this novel and given me their thoughts about it, sat down over a cup of tea and just laughed and got angry and were joyful over the idea of this book. Even some of the blurbers of the book, Marlon James and Kiese Lehman, talk about the idea of those ancestors reading this book and being pleased. And that is, that would be a dream if they could have done that and would have liked the work. I wish that would be such a dream come true.
Well, it seems like every year there's a novel that comes out that the entire country just stops and says, you know what, this is the one that we're going to remember for years and years, and I have a feeling The Prophets is going to be it this year. The book is The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr. It's his brand new novel, debut novel, and boy, he hit a grand slam with this one. Robert, just a fantastic book. It meant so much to me, and thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Brian, thank you so much for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.